death goddess. You have been exposing yourself to the memories of undead creatures that are essentially evil incarnate, without mental defenses and without me. Living through a memory can have the same consequences as living through the acts themselves. You could have been exposed to energies that your mind couldn't endure. You could have died. Or worse, your mind could have been fractured. Even if you died and were resurrected, you have no idea if those mental wounds would have healed. Since I have gained this level of consciousness, I have come to understand how rare you are, Master. No other creature I have observed has gained so many powers so fast, but you are still mortal. If you continue to play with forces and magics beyond your control without taking precautions, you will kill yourself, and you just might take me and everyone else you love with you. After we are gone, even if you come back, you will be alone, my love.
Her verbal attack had begun as a fiery tempest, but her last words were more of a sorrowful entreaty. His heart aching from the love in her voice, Richter reached out a hand and rested it on her head. She was a lot bigger in the mindscape, more of a Great Dane than a cat, but she was still his soul familiar. Her voice almost caught when she spoke again.
If something were to happen to you, I don't know.
Shh, he comforted her softly. In all the worlds, in all the dimensions, across all of space and time, the most unlikely thing happened. We found each other. If we are ever separated, I promise, I will find you again. He gave her a wan smile, and she bumped him with her large head in loving response. Even in the mindscape, time seemed to freeze for a moment, as if the universe stopped to witness his vow. Richter chuckled, and now, with a normal and joking voice, he told her, "Now stop interrupting. We're missing the movie." He mentally pushed play again. Chapter 79, Retained Memory. The memory began with Richter seeing a long stone bridge through the Death Knight's eyes. The natural span of stone was suspended over a chasm so deep he could not see the bottom. Nian turned his head forward, giving Richter a view of the grand structure in front of him. It was a terraced pyramid that vaguely reminded the Chaos Seed of Mayan ruins, but the similarities stopped there. Those South American wonders had been built to honor their gods and reflect their advanced knowledge of astronomy. This structure looked, for lack of a better word, evil. It was constructed entirely of a gray metal so dark that it was almost pure black. Half-formed arches extended out from it in spots, looking like the segmented legs of an approaching spider. Green eldritch light shone forth from various openings, hinting at dark sorceries taking place within. Liquid oozed out in places, and even this was corrupted. It fell from pipes, pooling like toxic waste, the same sickly green as everything else. Sharp spires dotted the pyramid here and there. They looked more like stiletto daggers than towers. Some had spikes sticking out of them like the thorns of a cactus, and each of these had a body impaled upon it. A few of the bodies were even still moving, crying out weakly in pain. Richter could hear Nian chuckle to himself as he observed the suffering. The Chaos Seed was happier than ever that he was remote viewing this memory as opposed to living it directly. He could not imagine the amount of ugly hate required to elicit such a horrible laugh. A low moan echoed behind the ghast. He turned his head to look at the other end of the bridge. Richter took a step back in his mindscape in spite of himself. Thousands upon thousands of undead were standing on a field at the end of the bridge. They were dead sprites, humans, elves, gnomes, and dwarves. Richter even saw a few beastkins scattered here and there, as well as other races he couldn't identify. Amidst the sea of 4 to 6 foot death creatures, behemoths dotted the landscape. Some were giant humanoids, others were undead beasts of huge proportions, and others were so alien that Richter couldn't even tell if they had a face. The one commonality between them all was the glow of eldritch light. Neon green power smoldered in the eyes of every undead creature as they stood there, their collective low moans vibrating the air. The Death Knight didn't react in any way to seeing such a terrible horde. He was not concerned or surprised in the slightest. He had no more reaction than Richter would at seeing his own guards patrolling the village. Richter interpreted that to mean such an army might normally be positioned in front of the bridge. How would they ever fight through that? The memory continued, unaffected by Richter's concerns. Nien's gaze returned forward, and this time he looked up, giving Richter a view of the one feature actually dominating the landscape. As impressive as the pyramid was, a gigantic statue dwarfed it. It must have been 100 stories high and featured a four-armed man, 2 limbs on either side. 3 arms held weapons, and the 4th was reaching forward as if it would crush anyone daring to look upon it. The face was both stern and cruel. 4 towers, almost the same size as the statue, surrounded the colossus in a square pattern. Massive neon green bonfires blazed atop each tower, and the flickering light made the statue's expression even more malevolent. Despite the fact that Richter was observing a memory, he was still disquieted by the callousness of the gaze. If it bothered Nien, though, there was no sign. The guest continued his walk, sometimes looking around. From the slight echo his plate boots made on the stone walkway, Richter had the impression that everything he was seeing was in a cavern, but when the Death Knight chanced to look up, all that could be seen was gloom. The natural bridge was only about 0.5 miles long and 100 yards wide. Creatures even taller than Nien's 9 feet stood guard at the base of the pyramid. They wore cowled cloaks like reapers, their faces hidden from view. Faint green glows issued from the hoods. 5 were stationed to the right of the stairs and another 5 were to the left. Their bony hands didn't hold scythes, though. Instead, they all held 6-foot-long claymores, the tips resting on the ground in front of them. If not for the faint movement of their robes, Richter might have thought they were statues. Nien paid them no heed as he strode past, climbing the 1st steps of the pyramid. He climbed 30 or 40 feet until he reached the next level of the structure. Then it was a short walk forward until the next set of stairs. More of the claymore-wielding undead were present, but this time they were flanked by undead holding bows of black wood. Green light glowed in the eye sockets of every creature Richter could see. The ghast continued on. Each set of stairs appeared to cover the same distance so far as Richter could tell. At the top of each staircase, there were open floors and another set of undead defenders. The pyramid was built like a stack of plates, each one smaller than the one below. It made the building wide, but not much taller than a 20-story building. Every level had a successively smaller number of guardians, but it was obvious that they were also becoming more powerful. By the 6th level, there were ghasts, revenants, and hulking zombies that must have weighed at least 500 pounds. The creatures grew larger and more formidable-looking after that. Nien ascended the stairs at a brisk pace, not stopping until he came to a small landing off the last stairwell, midway between the 10th floor and the roof. There were only 2 guardians present. Unlike the undead below, these looked like beautiful, though pale, humans. Their skin was so white, it could only be described as alabaster. Both wore mage robes and held wands wreathed in the black energy of dark magic. They were the 1st creatures Richter had seen in this place, whose eyes did not glow neon green. Instead, they flashed with distaste when they saw Nien. The one on the right pointed his wand directly at the ghast's chest.
"If it isn't the master's faithful dog, coming to heal when cold," he spat.
Based on the long fangs Richter saw when it spoke, he was now fairly sure what kind of creature he was seeing. Nien's response was laced with scorn.
"Lucas, better to be a guard dog than a bitch like you, do you not think? What's your tone, creature?"
the other vampire shouted.
Or what, Mikhail?
The guest laughed mockingly.
You will drink my blood.
I would not sully my mouth on whatever gross sludge flows through you,
Mikhail responded with a disgusted sneer.
Just like your brother's cock, then.
Somehow, the gross, guttural intonations of the guest made the insult even worse when compared to the refined speech of the two vampires.
Let us end this,
Lucas spat. Dark energy began to build at the end of the wand. If Nien was daunted, it did not reflect in his voice. He was just as condescending and dismissive as before.
Neither of you have the strength or the courage to oppose our master. You are barely better than those mindless green-eyed slaves.
He laughed, waving to the sea of minions behind him.
No matter what petty feelings you have, it does not change the fact that our master gave dominion of your ancestral place of power to me.
His voice became even more condescending.
If I am wrong, use your magic and strike me down. You are both vampire master magi. You might even stand a chance. Show me that you are not just hollow sacks filled with nothing but impotence and false words.
Richter could see the ghast spread his arms wide, as if in invitation. Nien held that pose for long seconds until Lucas's arm fell, and Mikhail looked away in anger and shame. Nien's laugh was even more derisive this time, as he strode past the two vampires and ascended the stairs leading to the roof. Richter finally saw what was at the top of the pyramid. There was no roof above, and the floor was made from the same giant, dark gray metal blocks as the rest of the pyramid. Directly in front of the ghast was a giant stone coffin. It floated above the ground, eldritch light peeking out from beneath the gray stone lid. Beyond the sarcophagus, a large wall of rough black rock rose. Stylized faces were carved into the wall, every one of them with expressions of utter agony. The eyes and mouths were holes that pierced the width of the walls, allowing the neon green light of the tower bonfires to shine through. It made the entire wall look like it was a living, screaming monument to pain. A giant face was set in the middle, and the open mouth was a doorway through the wall. Again, even though he knew it was only a memory, Richter was seriously disturbed by the scene, and Alma even nuzzled her head against him for comfort. Nien had no reaction. He just knelt before the coffin and waited. Long minutes passed before the light coming from the sarcophagus intensified. The lid scraped back with a loud, gravelly sound. Even though Nien was not looking directly at the coffin, the light grew almost blinding as more of the inner radiance was revealed. It flared brighter still before finally subsiding. Then, Richter heard a voice he had only heard once before in real life, a voice that sounded many more times in his nightmares.
You have come, my servant. This is good.
The lich's voice was a rasping whisper. Nien looked upon his master, allowing Richter to do the same. He looked very much the same as the last time the Chaos Seed had seen him. The master of eldritch magic was not physically imposing. He was a gaunt figure with papery, desiccated skin the color of gray shale. Only two things had changed. The few wisps of white hair that Richter remembered had fallen out, leaving only a disgusted gray pate of wrinkled skin on his head. The other difference was what he was wearing. When he had seen him in Jorgen's memory, the lich had been wearing an unassuming red robe and basic pants. Now he was festooned with opulent jewelry and attired in fine raiment. 8 bejeweled rings hugged his fingers on both hands, and Richter would bet anything they were heavily enchanted. Richter attempted to use his identification talent, but of course, he had no ability to impact the memory of another being. As the lich floated out of the coffin, a black robe with golden runes etched upon it fell into place around the caster. He also wore a crown made of what looked like finger bones with jewels embedded in it at intervals. the most impressive accoutrement was his staff. It had the fluid look of quicksilver, but rather than a silvery color, it was orange-yellow. The base of the staff was a simple line of metal, but the top was the size of a stop sign. It had three spikes protruding out from it, two to either side and one sticking straight up. The middle was hollow, and a gigantic emerald had been set in the space. It throbbed with eldritch light.
"My master,"
Nien intoned, still kneeling. All of his earlier cockiness was gone. The only undertones that remained in his voice were respect and deference.
"Rise,"
the lich commanded. It was the same whispering voice that Richter remembered. It made the hairs on the back of his neck stand up and his skin shivered. The first time he'd heard it, he had felt like a spider was slowly walking across his brain. It wasn't any better hearing it this time. What made it worse was that even though the lich's voice sounded wholly unnatural, it didn't stop an air of culture and sophistication from oozing through. The Death Knight stood.
"I have come as called, my master. How may your humble servant serve you?"
"There is a power awakening. It is familiar to me. An echo from my living life."
"From before your sentence?"
He tried to keep the surprise from his voice, but Richter picked up on it easily. The Chaos Seed could not know the Death Knight's emotions or thoughts, as he was only remote viewing the memory, but Nien clearly had no love for his master. The Chaos Seed doubted the Death Knight could even experience that emotion.
"My lord, I have been your faithful servant for centuries. In all that time, you have never shared details of your living life. Does this new power pose a danger to you?"
The lich did not answer, but the green lights in his eyes began to smolder a bit brighter. Nien quickly bowed his head.
"I meant no disrespect, Dark Lord. Please, forgive me."
Quiet reigned for several tense seconds before the lich began speaking again.
"Nothing and no one can rival my power, worm."
Nien bowed his head in subservience. Silence reigned again. The lich was satisfied by the display of respect, because he continued in a more speculative tone.
"It is foolish to ignore any rising power, however. Jorgen, the guardian of the dark portal, has been destroyed. I am sending you to the world above to investigate. You are to discover the nature of this threat and destroy it."
"By your command, my master, I will gather my army and reclaim the portal."
"No,"
the lich commanded.
"I have sent a behemoth slime to lie in wait for whatever army is foolish enough to use the portal and invade my domain."
Richter could not see it. But Nien grinned.
"Wonderful, master. My only wish I can watch the slaughter. How will I return to the surface without the portal, however? The trip through the tunnels will take many days."
"I will send you. I cannot guarantee where you will go, but I have been able to sense a concentration of death magic. My magic will transport you there. Raise an army and lay waste to any living that you find. You will need two objects to accomplish your task."
The lich reached inside of its robes and handed over a small jar.
"This salve will allow you to see in the mists."
"Mists, my lord?"
Nien asked. The lich stayed silent for a moment. When he spoke, he almost sounded like he was speaking to himself.
"I am remembering things that I thought were lost forever. There is a place of power above us that may have been claimed. If so, the master will be able to cast a spell that confuses the senses, even of the undead. Apply this salve beneath your eyes and the eyes of your creatures, and you will be immune to the mists that cause this."
"My master is wise,"
Nien fawned.
"Step forward,"
the lich whispered, ignoring the false accolade. Nien did so, and the mage began to chant. The jewel in his staff began to flash with light. A small finger bone rose from the crypt. It glowed with eldritch magic after a few moments, and Nian's master drew a dagger from the inside of his robe. Without hesitation, the mage cut Nian on the neck and placed the bone at the incision site. The ghast did not flinch or pull away. The skeletal finger wriggled like a parasite, worming its way through the Death Knight's eternally decaying flesh. It finally settled under his left collarbone.
"You may now call upon my power, one time, and one time only, to help you finish your quest. When your task is done, this bone will also bring you back to my sarcophagus. Heed my warning. You are not trained in the use of eldritch magic, and invoking it will cause great damage to your body. With your high health, you will survive and recover, but do not use this item unless you are at full strength. Otherwise, it will destroy you utterly. Also, this magic is extremely taxing, and I will only have the strength to send you and you alone. But you should be able to raise undead if the concentration of death energy is indeed as strong as I suspect."
"By your will,"
Nian responded, bowing his head for a moment.
"Do not fail me. Nevor is almost in retrograde. It will allow me to commune with Rakshasa, though I must begin marshalling my power now in order to establish the conduit. You will travel to the surface and destroy this threat. Do so before I finish the ritual, or I will ask our patron for enough power to scour the surface and you with it."
There was no inflection in the Lich's voice as it discussed the death of every living creature in Richter's domain.
"I will not fail, Dark Lord,"
Nian promised, bowing again.
"I will slay every living creature I find and harvest their hearts in tribute to you."
"One final question, servant, before you leave to manifest my will. Whom do you serve?"
The Lich raised its staff, and green energy began to surround the ghast. Nian answered without hesitation, throwing an arm straight out in a closed fist salute.
"Sing! Sing the Defiler!"
The Lich spoke words of power, the intonations making Richter's skin crawl. Green light built around the Death Knight until, with a clap like thunder, he disappeared. The image froze, and the light coming from the memory pyramid began to darken. Richter looked at his familiar, taking comfort in her presence. The memory had been extremely illuminating. He now knew the name of his enemy, Sing the Defiler. The memory had also answered one other thing that had been bothering him, namely how the undead had made it from the sepulchre to the Kinder settlement without the mists leading them astray. What he had seen raised more questions than it answered, though. How had Sing known about the salve? Richter assumed the awakening power was his own, but what did it mean that the Lich was familiar with it? Had the Lich once lived on the surface, maybe even in an earlier iteration of the Mist Village? Richter already knew that many before him had possessed the mantle of master of his place of power. Could it be even worse? Could the Lich... His musings were interrupted by the sound of panic in Alma's voice.
"Master!"
Alma cried out. Richter came out of his reverie to see that the image on the rotating pyramid had begun to lighten again. It was no longer frozen, and he could see the Lich's head searching the air around him. The Chaos Seed tried to pause it again, but he had lost control. Then Sing spoke.
"I cannot see you, but I will find you. This is the second time you have spied upon me, and for that affront, I will stretch your soul over a dire flame and torture you for an aeon."
The Lich's voice was vicious with hate. It began to cast a spell, and as it did, the aura of eldritch energy that surrounded the rapidly spinning memory began to thicken and widen. Tendrils of power appeared at the periphery, blindly searching the air around the spinning pyramid. Even though they were not directed, they grew thicker and longer by the second. With a flash of fear, Richter realized they were trying to find him. As the eldritch light grew in his mindscape, the image of the lich was replaced with a dark and bottomless voice. A horrible sucking noise filled Richter's ears, and he began to feel a pull. Even as the eldritch tentacles searched for him, the memory itself became a vortex into the abyss. "How can he do this?" the Chaos Seed shouted at Alma over the ever-increasing sound of the wind.
"I don't know, but you have to get rid of it!"
She launched off the battlement and breathed glass flame on the ropes of eldritch magic. Richter did as he was told. He tried to force the memory away. It barely budged. Somehow, the lich had hijacked the spinning pyramid. He tried to control the green magic or force it to get smaller, but to no avail. The tendrils of power just grew larger and more numerous, even as Alma tried to burn them away. They got closer to him each second. He didn't even want to consider what would happen if the lich was able to lay hold of his avatar. It would have direct access to his mind. He pushed and strained for all he was worth until he realized how foolish he was being in his panic. This wasn't a real pyramid. It was all in his mind. His mind. If he didn't want something there, he just needed to... Do you wish to discard the memory of Nien the Reaver now, yes or no? Richter had never been so happy to see a prompt. He chose yes immediately, and the spinning pyramid fractured into millions of pieces, taking the vortex of nothingness with it. The connection between himself and the lich vanished, and the tentacles of eldritch power winked out of existence. The particles of memory faded away, leaving no trace that they had ever existed. The Chaos Seed collapsed to his knees, both in his mindscape and in reality, exhausted in mind, if not in body. Chapter 80, Day 145, Kuborn 35, 0 AOC.
Are you all right? Sion asked.
He slipped an arm under Richter's to help him stand. Alma echoed the question inside of Richter's mind.
Yes,
Richter hissed, answering them both. His dragon form was significantly heavier than his human body, and Sion wasn't able to move him until he stood under his own power.
The lich is strong, but I was able to observe the memory remotely this time. I have much to tell all of you.
You could also just show them, Alma added inside of his mind.
Is that possible, my love?
The dragonling had the ability to transmit images to others if she made a temporary psychic bond by looking them in the eyes, but Richter had never been able to duplicate the act himself.
I'm fairly sure, she told him.
Richter broached the topic to all present. Yoshi immediately looked uncomfortable with the idea of anyone being in his mind. Sumiko, Hisako, and Randolphus agreed, however. Tirad said he would if Richter required it, and Calder demurred, saying all he needed to know was what to hit and when. Sion fixed his friend with a glare, though, quickly followed by,
You're weird all the time, and now you're a lizard, so no.
A simple no would have been fine, Richter hissed at him in irritation.
Then he made eye contact with the three who were willing, establishing weak mental connections. After that, he replayed the scene, cutting the memory off before the lich became aware of his surveillance. Alma doubted that the eldritch lord could have any power through the memory of a memory, but better safe than sorry. He just verbally related that part to all of them. The process of sharing the memory went at the accelerated speed of his mindscape, condensing the 20-minute memory down to just over 3 real-time. All of them had emotional reactions to what they saw. Randolphus looked troubled. Sumiko looked overwhelmed. But it was Hisako's reaction that was the most severe.
A mausoleum, she spat.
Her hands curled into claws of rage and her eyes flashed in anger.
I believe you are right, Hearth Mother,
Sumiko agreed sadly. Everyone else looked at each other at a loss for words. Richter had never seen Hisako have such a visceral and angry reaction. He was about to ask what she meant when the timer on his bond expired. Blue-white light flowed out of him and his body resumed its normal human shape. Sion looked at the ball of psychic energy that was slowly coalescing back into Alma, completely fascinated. He slowly extended a hand towards it. Richter slapped his questing fingers.
Dude!
Don't poke my familiar psychic energy. It's creepy. With an awkward look on his face, the sprite pulled his hand back. Richter turned towards Hisako. Now, what do you mean by a mausoleum? At this point, his ear had become accustomed to picking up when people pronounced things with the special emphasis that denoted a capital letter. He had a feeling he wasn't going to like this. Hisako ignored him and instead reached out with her arm. To the Chaos Seed's astonishment, her hand seemed to disappear for a moment. When she pulled her arm back, she was holding a large blue parchment. "How did you do that?" Richter asked, amazed. She hadn't reached into a bag of holding. She had just reached into nothing and pulled out an item.
"There is still much you have to learn, young lord," she told him curtly.
Then, with a few muttered words of power, a white glow surrounded her hand. A moment later, a table appeared, formed entirely of sparkling light magic. She unrolled the large scroll, and the Chaos Seed saw that it looked like a star chart. There were even angles and calculations drawn upon it. He shook his head. Her casual display of magic always reminded him of what a large difference in power there was between the two of them. Sumiko was the one that answered Richter's question.
"A mausoleum is a core building, much like your Forge of Heavens and Dragon's Cauldron."
Richter's eyes widened in surprise and alarm. Core buildings offered the potential of great power. His own were only the size of a large grocery store, though. The pyramid was the size of an airport. "But it's so big. Does that mean it's insanely powerful?" Sumiko clicked her tongue in irritation.
"Humans, bigger does not always mean better,"
Sion snickered. "That's not what your mom said." Yoshi slapped the back of the younger sprite's head without looking.
"In this case, however,"
Hisako interjected, ignoring her son's yelp of pain,
"you may be correct, Lord Richter."
She was still looking down at the chart before her, but she took over the conversation.
"A mausoleum is a core building created by combining a crypt, a magic core, and a relic. It allows whoever controls it to summon large armies of undead, and greatly supplements the powers of those death creatures."
"You've come across one before?" Richter asked.
"No,"
she responded grimly, shaking her head.
"I have a tome in my library that lists hundreds of core buildings throughout history. It details their powers, level by level."
"I've got to get that book," Richter said to himself. Reading hadn't been a major priority since he'd come to the land, but more and more he was realizing what a mistake that was. Now wasn't the time to bring that up, though. "Okay, so the mausoleum is a bad thing, and it explains how the Lich has that giant army. What does it have to do with Nivur being in retrograde?" The Hearth Mother kept poring over the astrological chart as she answered.
"You most likely already know that there are 7 moons orbiting the land. What you may not know is that each moon corresponds to one of the basic elements. Vidal is the life moon. Nivur is the moon of death. Toresta is fire. Aquiel, water. Kalian is the moon of air. And Potrok is of earth. Finally, Tenebrit is the moon of dark magic."
Richter had been counting along. "But there are 8 basic elements. What about light?" Hisako looked up from her furious inspection of the star chart with a slightly annoyed look on her face. The Hearth Mother might have the potential to be sweet and matronly, but she was also the leader that had enacted a strict policy of executions for any non-sprite found in her territory for decades, if not centuries. Seeing that look on her face, Richter was reminded that she wasn't just a cute 4-foot redhead.
"Can you truly not think of a celestial body that represents light?"
Apparently, she also did not like to be asked idle questions when she was focusing. It occurred to him a moment later. "The sun," he answered lamely. With a sharp nod of her head, she looked back down at the chart, one finger tracing along a particular celestial path. Sion snickered behind him and muttered, "Dumbass." He made sure he was nowhere near Yoshi when he said it. Richter shot him a sharp look, and the sprite just looked back with level 6 smugness and level 10 asshole, the kind of ridicule only a best friend can muster. Twisting his lips in irritation, Richter turned his attention back to the Hearth Mother. Everyone was quiet for a bit, letting Hisako work. A few minutes later,
She looked up grimly and pronounced, "We have 5 days."
Chapter 81, Day 145, Kuborn 35, 0 AOC.
They were supposed to have a full week. That was when the quest he'd gotten from the spirit Krista would expire. The spectral girl had suffered torment for centuries at the hands of her father and the Lich Lord. Even though Richter had freed her of that rage that had trapped her and other spirits on this plane, the ghosts had decided to delay moving on in order to take revenge on the Lich that had tortured them for so long. Krista had given him a coin that would call her and the other spirits to his aid, but had only given him a month to use it. That time limit would expire in 7 more days. If she was right, the loss of 2 days would be a hit to their preparation, but still, 2 days didn't seem like enough to merit her grim expression.
5 days? Richter repeated, hoping for some elaboration.
Yes, she responded in anger, slamming the table.
She closed her eyes and visibly forced herself to be calm.
When you first told me there was an eldritch mage hiding in the tunnels beneath the forest, I knew he had to be dealt with. What you saw in the memory, however, is something much worse. While eldritch users are dangerous, they will ultimately destroy themselves. Their magic is anathema to the natural order. It creates an imbalance in the world around them. Anyone and anything can be corrupted. Even the landscape can be warped. This imbalance ultimately leads to their downfall as the natural forces of the land lash out to try and correct the inequity. The Eldritch is most assuredly a path to great power, but there is always a horrible price to be paid. That is why I did not understand how such a creature could have existed for so many centuries without destroying himself, let alone how he could have escaped my notice for so long. The mausoleum answers the first question. Somehow the Lich has transferred the corruption of his magic to each of his undead soldiers. That sea of undead is shouldering the majority of the imbalance his magic creates. That is not the most concerning part of your vision, however. That statue is an exile.
Calder swore at hearing that, and moved his hand in a way that Richter had seen others do to ward off evil. Tarad's hand squeezed his sword hilt so tightly that it squeaked. Even Yoshi's face paled slightly at the announcement. Richter hated always being the one who didn't know things, but he had to ask.
What's an exile? Is it some kind of god? I thought the gods had all been banished.
Hisako looked at him with faint surprise, but then shook her head ruefully.
I forget sometimes that you have been in the land for barely half a year. No, Lord Richter, the exiles are not gods. The exiles are the beings that banished the gods.
It was Richter's turn to feel a sickening sensation in his chest. This thing that the Lich is about to commune with is even stronger than a god?
In some ways, yes,
Hisako responded. Then she told him the story of the land's creation. How beings of cosmic power had divided themselves into 2 factions, the Light and the Dark Court. How their war had sundered worlds and caused stars to implode. Then she talked about the final battle, a clash that threatened reality itself.
At that point, she continued, something happened. I do not know what, but it is said that the universe itself intervened.
The universe? Richter asked. Like some guy made out of stars and planets?
No,
she answered flatly, rolling her eyes.
A consciousness so far beyond any of us that our minds cannot even imagine the concepts needed to describe it. It is the interconnected energy of every reality at every time that ever was, is, or could have been. The conflict between the 2 courts threatened creation itself, so it responded.
How? He asked.
By forcing every member of the courts into a new sliver of reality, a pocket dimension with only 1 exit. It then slammed the door closed and locked it with a living representation of every energy and magic that existed. That lock is the land.
Richter's face screwed up in confusion.
The land, the magics in it, the life force of the people in it, the very stones themselves, are all part of a magic spell that was created to keep the Light and Dark Courts imprisoned.
Our world was created to generate the magic needed to sustain the spell until the end of the universe. As long as the land exists, it can power whatever it is that the universe did to keep the court sequestered, and thereby protect every other soul in creation. That is why the denizens of the court want to utterly destroy the world that we stand upon.
Okay, Richter thought to himself. No pressure. All right, I get the backstory, he said. But what are the exiles, and what does that have to do with the Lich? If they're locked away by the universe itself, why do we have to worry?
The members of the Dark and Light Court that were locked away continued to war upon each other in the Pocket Dimension. After a time, however, they realized that they were evenly matched. Killing one member of the Light cost the life of one member of the Dark. Their eternal war was quickly whittling their forces down to nothing. It is not known how long it took, but the two powers came to a detente. The members of both courts, who have come to be known as the Originals, began to breed. Their offspring, beings of terrible power and will, were born into the captivity of the Pocket Dimension. They came to be known as the Exiles. These children of the courts were then used to continue the battle. Exiles are born to be battle fodder for a war that never had a valid purpose and now has even less of one. While the remaining originals stay above the fray, countless generations of exiles have been continuously born to fight and die without end for all time.
So what? We feel bad for these guys? Richter asked.
No,
she answered with a stark expression.
We fear them. While exiles may not match originals in terms of raw power, they still possess the might needed to rip time apart if they were ever set free. Even worse, eons of battle have killed any with a trace of kindness. Those that have survived are the most intelligent and the most cruel. Their innate power is now coupled with the viciousness their tormented lives has taught them. Even one exile, if ever released, could mean an age of sorrow for every living creature and generations of their descendants.
It was quiet in the room as everyone thought about the enormity of what Hisako had just said. Hisako looked at Richter, her face deadly serious.
You must understand. No one knows exactly how old the land is. Even the great worms of the deep are said to have been born after it was created. What is known, however, is that cataclysms have shook this world time and again. Horrible events have scoured the entire surface of life, have made whole nations sink into seas, have opened gateways that allow demons to hold sway over continents for millennia. Each time, however, the land would overcome these injuries and in time heal. This world was personally created by the universe itself, and it was made to be resilient and powerful.
That's a good thing, right? I mean, not about the demons and the life scouring, but the fact that it always bounces back.
It is, Hisako replied, nodding. But there are ancient repositories of knowledge, warded with runes that reach into the very bedrock of the land. In them are texts that have survived the last several cataclysms. These primeval tomes tell of beings of great power. They have been called devils, demons, ancient gods of evil and other words that now only exist in these works. Whatever these beings were called, that was always a central theme. They all hint that each and every cataclysm was triggered by the whispers of an exile. They say each of these horrifying chapters of history were attempts to destroy the land itself and free the courts so that they may once again spread their evil throughout the stars. If this lich is an exile worshipper, Hisako finished, we cannot allow it to pass energy along to its master or even worse, receive gifts that would let him destroy us utterly. Because of your ability to access memories, he now knows that forces are being arrayed against him, and if we do not move quickly, it could not only kill all of us, every man, woman, and suckling child, but kill the forest itself and leave only despair in its wake.
Hisako rested a hand on Richter's shoulder when she saw the hurt on his face.
I do not blame you for this situation. If you hadn't accessed the memory, we would not know of the trap the Lich had set for us. Hundreds of lives might have been lost. We also would have waited a full week, and the Lich's power might have been augmented by the exile, again, dooming us to failure. You absolutely have saved us, my Lord Richter, but it does not change the danger we all face.
For several seconds, silence reigned over the Great Seal.
I thank you for saying that,
Hearthmother, Richter finally managed, swallowing hard. I still do not understand how this exile, Rakshasa, can hurt us if the universe itself locked them all away.
No prison is perfect, Hisako told him. Neither the originals nor the exiles can directly affect the land, but they can whisper. There are always those willing to trade their lives and even their very souls for power. Though the exiles were born of the originals, they are still almost as old as the land itself. The knowledge and magics they can impart is enough to get many selfish creatures to do their will. Knowledge is not the only risk that exile worshippers pose, however. There is one thing that no prison can stop, and that is energy itself. All that is has been formed out of some type of energy. This is an immutable law. The exiles are able to gain some small amount of power from the actions of their servants and from the sacrifices they perform. It has also been said that exiles have, in rare cases, gifted favored servants with some of their own power. If you have any doubt as to the danger of their influence, remember one thing that you yourself have already mentioned. There are no gods in the land. That is because though the gods may have been diametrically opposed to one another, and many were capricious and wicked, they all shared one common trait. A great deal of their power stemmed from their worshippers and the faith that was placed in them. As the end goal of every exile and original is the destruction of the land, it means that the gods would lose a great deal if that ever came to pass. They might even be destroyed. For this reason alone, the banished gods of this world were often the greatest opponents of any scheme hatched by the light and dark courts.
She fixed him with a poignant stare.
So the courts banished them from the land.
How? Richter asked, dragging the word out. Bloodthirsty goblins, rock giants with a grudge, even castrating assassins, he could deal with. He'd been knocked down, tortured, and even killed, but each time he had come back stronger and meaner. Every single creature that had challenged him had come to regret it. It was usually their last regret, and the last sight most had seen was his smiling face as he ended them. But what could he possibly do against creatures that could defeat gods?
I do not know, Hisako answered, shaking her head. Philosophers and master mages have wrestled with that question for millennia. How does not matter, however. What matters is that we destroy the Lich before he finishes the connection to his exile patron.
Could he really scour all life from the forest? Richter asked.
I do not know that either,
Hisako replied with uncertainty in her voice. Then her face grew steely and her tone as hard as granite.
What we do know is that the Lich believes he could. We cannot take the chance that he is right. That creature must be destroyed.
What of this behemoth slime? How dangerous is it?
Behemoth slime?
Sion asked, not having experienced the memory. Hisako absently supplied the answer.
Behemoth slimes are amongst the most horrifying of monsters. Almost any slime can consume and over time dissolve other creatures. Behemoths do the same, but instead of destroying one enemy at a time, their bodies can flow like a tidal wave and destroy entire regiments. If such a monster is indeed lying in wait, then we cannot use the dark portal.
Okay, Richter said, blanching. Being drowned and digested in living ooze sounded like one of the worst imaginable fates. The Lich still has to be dealt with, though. How are we even supposed to get there?
Sumiko stepped forward. With an enigmatic smile, she reached into a robe. She pulled out a vial and shook it. It made a faint clink-clink sound, and Richter could see a small bone behind the glass, glowing green with eldritch energy.
I think I can help with that.
Richter rushed forward and grabbed the vial. For a moment, despite all the warnings, he wondered what goodies he could get if he fed the bone to his dungeon. Eldritch magic seemed quite powerful. A second later, he shook off that thought as ridiculous and addressed the village healer. This is the bone that the Lich put under Nian's skin?
I wasn't sure what the significance was when I found it in the gas body, but now there is no doubt.
Remembering the second effect of the bone, to bring the Death Knight back to the Lich's sarcophagus, Richter could kiss the Life Mage. Can you trigger the magic in it to get us to the top of the mausoleum? He asked excitedly.
I cannot,
she answered. Richter's face fell. Then she added,
Only a being already steeped in eldritch magic can use this talisman.
She kept smiling the entire time. Why are you... Then it dawned on him. They did have access to a being that had been steeped in eldritch magic. She meant the Decamer Knight. He still didn't understand why she was grinning at such a time. If anything, it should make her unhappy that the knight would turn out to be so useful. She and Bayon had almost come to blows over whether he could claim the knight as a pet. Then Richter remembered the Lich's warning to Nien about how the Death Knight should only use the enchanted bone when he was at full strength. The Death Knight's health had been nearly 1,000. The Decamer Knight's health was less than half that. It suddenly became clear why Sumiko was happy. Not only would the Decamer Knight be destroyed, but she could mess with Bayon at the same time. Richter sighed heavily, imagining how that conversation was going to go with the Death Mage. Hoping he was wrong, he decided to double-check. So when the Decamer Knight triggers the enchantment, it
will most likely be completely destroyed,
Sumiko finished happily. Apparently, even the threat of an exile was not enough to steal the Life Mage's joy at sticking it to her gnome counterpart. With a broad smile, she asked,
Would you like to tell him? Or shall I?
Chapter 82, Day 145, Qu'Born 35, 0 AOC.
Bloodless, sexless, countenance slag of a biomancer! She's enjoying this!
Bayon shouted, pointing at Sumiko.
Tweet smiling at me, bitch! How are you bony and fat?
She just shook her head in response. The innocent expression on her face was completely undercut by the devilish look in her eyes. Her mouth also contained barrels of barely contained laughter. The sprite was enjoying this so much that even the insult of a necromancer couldn't knock her off her perch.
No, Bayon. I'm as sad about this as you are. Really?
She stuck her bottom lid out in a pouty frown.
She doesn't mean it!
Bayon complained loudly to Richter, pointing again at Sumiko. With the necromancer no longer looking at her, the sprite elder shook her head at the chaos seed and gleefully mouthed,
No, I do not.
Hiding a laugh behind a cough, Richter tried to look sympathetic.
She does, man. She does. Either way, though, we need you. I need you. The village, your home, needs you. Will you really tell all of us no?
Richter watched the interplay of emotions across the gnome's face. He wondered idly if the village's loyalty rank of trusting was coming into play. The blurb associated with it had clearly stated that his people would begin to put the well-being of the settlement above their own. Either way, Richter didn't plan to take no for an answer. In fact, when Bayon had bound the knight, he had made sure that his own will would override the gnome's in regards to commanding the undead servant. It would still be better if the necromancer came to this decision on his own, though. After chewing his lip and complaining a few more times, the gnome finally nodded.
Good man, Richter told him, clapping the Death Mage on the shoulder.
And you never know. Your servant might survive the process. He put a little pressure on Bayon's shoulder to turn him so the gnome wouldn't see Sumiko once again gleefully mouthing,
Nope.
Bayon walked away, looking absolutely crestfallen. Richter wasn't too worried. He planned to make the gnome his diplomat to Virgit Kunig. That would give Bayon ready access to the undead sepulcher. Not only was Richter sure the gnome would be greatly useful in discovering the full capabilities of that place, but he was fairly certain the necromancer would be ecstatic to have access to such a high concentration of death magic. Richter decided not to share that info until after the battle with the Lich, though. If he told Bayon now, the little bald man would be running through the forest 5 minutes later. Putting it out of his mind, he turned back to everyone still present at the Great Seal. While he had been waiting for Bayon to show up, they had all started coming up with a plan of attack. Hisako and Sumiko had spent some time looking at the bone and casting a few diagnostic spells.
As far as they could determine, the eldritch magic fed on the life energy of the operator to tear a portal in space. The actual magic powering the spell was eluding them, though. "What I don't understand," Richter said, drawing Hisako's attention, "is how that little bone can contain transportation magic. If it's that easy, why are we building portals between our settlements? They're kind of expensive, you know." Hisako thought for a few moments, figuring out how best to respond.
"In the land, nothing is impossible, Lord Richter. It is good to remember that. There is also almost always more than one way to accomplish a goal. Masters of air magic, for instance, are paid exorbitant sums by kings and the richest of nobles to transport individuals quickly, either by flight or teleportation. The high cost these magi are paid is not only because very few individuals can manage such magic, but also because such magic consumes rare and expensive spell components that, once used, are gone forever. The Lich has apparently found a way to use a similar power, but I am sure it also came at a steep cost. Despite what he said about not being concerned about you, he would not have sent his most trusted servant here if that were true. I am willing to bet that the cost of transport in this case was quite high to him personally. Do not forget that travel in this method also takes a serious toll upon the health of whoever uses it. If it is as damaging as I believe, few creatures could even survive using this method of travel. The Lich could not even guarantee exactly where he was sending the Death Knight, instead just honing in on a vague location centered around a concentration of death magic. The true power of the portals you have learned to create lies in these three concepts: safe, reliable, and self-sustaining. The portals we will build will not only transport individuals, they will transport armies. We will also be able to send one another large amounts of goods instantly, with no ill effects and without requiring any magical precious resources after the initial cost of construction. This bone, Hisako continued, motioning to the vial she held, will most likely destroy the gnome's servant to open a very small rip in space. The cost to keep it open, I believe it will be severe.
"Define severe," Richter requested slowly. A confusing series of emotions crossed her face. It was too quick for him to read, but her sorrowful tone was clear.
"Either myself or Sumiko will have to stay behind when you go to battle the Lich. Depending on the specific types of magic that were corrupted by the Eldritch to power this spell, we may need magi of other spell types to remain behind as well."
That news was a bit of a hit to Richter, but he didn't interrupt.
"You have seen that one of the capabilities I obtained by becoming a life master is that I can use the willing life energy of others to power my spells as long as we are in contact."
Richter nodded. When she had enchanted the seed core that later became the quickening, she had cast a scalable spell. The more mana she had invested in it, the stronger it had grown. To accomplish this, several sprites had placed their hands on her. Then several more sprites had placed their hands on each of them. This pattern had repeated again and again until hundreds of sprites had been connected together in a spiral pattern with the Hearth Mother in the center. She had been able to draw upon the mana of her entire settlement to power the spell.
"I do not know exactly how much energy will be necessary to keep the portal open, but I am sure it will be massive. One of us must stay behind to feed energy into the gateway, so that whoever goes through the portal can return."
"Or both of us should stay."
Sumiko spoke up quietly but firmly, looking at the Hearth Mother.
"Sumiko,"
Hisako said warningly.
"No,"
the Maidon Mage replied. Her voice was resolute and she chopped down and away with her hand.
"I will not keep silent about this."
Turning to Richter, she told him,
"Life magic may not work on the other side of the portal. Depending on what level the mausoleum has reached, it might completely inhibit the power of biomancers. It could even inhibit water and earth magic."
"Is this true?" Richter asked his ally.
"Yes,"
Hisako finally admitted begrudgingly.
"I was, of course, going to tell you, but first I was going to compare what I saw in the memory against what is described in the book I mentioned."
She shot Sumiko a glare.
"I merely wanted to gather more information before I brought this matter to you."
Yoshi spoke up for the first time.
"No matter what it shows, Hearth Mother,
You cannot risk yourself on this mission if your magic could be hobbled.
Hisako drew herself up to her full 4 feet. May I remind you, Adept Yoshi, that I am your liege. You also should not need to be reminded that I